The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
In the year since the House Select Committee began its investigation into the deadly January 6th assault on the Capitol, it has conducted more than 1,000 depositions and interviews and collected over 140,000 documents. Now its findings are ready for prime time.
Every conversation.
The committee will hold public hearings starting Thursday evening.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, something to watch this evening. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be back with you today. Thanks for tuning in and allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Hey, I want to thank John Harper for sitting in for me during my absence, and of course, the great Ed Morrissey. Both of those men, consummate professionals, and I'm so glad that they were able to spend some time with you as well. I was away in just a little bit of R&R, had to attend a wedding, and I'm back. We'll be praying the chapel live in about an hour or so. If you want to join me for that, or you think someone else really needs some prayer, why don't you call them and have them be part of the spiritual community that gathers every day around that time. So about an hour from now, we will pray big time. Maybe I'll share some answered prayers. I definitely have a couple big intentions that have come in I want to bring to you. And, of course, we'll take your calls. So all that more coming up. But tonight, I just heard that audio there. Yeah, big stuff, right? Primetime viewing. Yeah. I find this so orchestrated is perhaps a word I'm looking for. A lot of your primetime viewing options, they're going to be disrupted. You're going to turn on the TV. People are going to say, what's this all about? They're going to have this January 6th committee, and they're going to hold hearings on what happened on that day last year. And I'm not going to let me get your take on this. I mean, do you care? Now, I know that's a dangerous thing to say because, the country's certainly divided on this whole thing, and I'm not making any excuses for what we saw. And there was loss of life on that day. It was horrible what unfolded. With inflation as high as it is and all these other issues that are now taking place, is this a political stunt, that we're going to scrub? Normally, these sessions take place around 10 a.m. They're going to hold these this evening during prime time to try to get, as many eyeballs as possible, bringing in, Hollywood talent to orchestrate these things. And again, I don't want to in any way diminish what happened. I think justice and truth should always prevail, and I want to be on the right side of that line, and there may be new evidence that's going to be revealed today. It'd be very interesting to see what happens. But I also just wonder what's happening on the political scene when we see the poll numbers. The president has the lowest poll numbers ever, right? And we're seeing unbelievable prices at the pump. My producer, Maggie, was telling me on my way into the studio today. I was going to church this afternoon to pray before the broadcast, and I said to Maggie, I'll be out in about 30 minutes, so if you need me, just give me a holler. And I said, my gosh, have you seen gas prices? And she says, you know what they are here? I said, no, what? She goes, they're almost $7 a gallon. That's Chicago, right? Chicago. That's crazy. Across the country, those prices keep going up. We'll look at that a little bit later. But don't let me diverge. I mean, we're seeing a lot going on in the economy, and I think people's focus is somewhere else. We'll see how this plays out. I'm just going to sit back, observe, and try to discern what is truth from what is, maybe some grandstanding. January 6th, of course, was the day that certainly got out of control at the U.S. Capitol, the day that Congress was gathered in a joint session. They were counting those electoral votes. Remember that? The president had held a rally. Next thing we know, people are just getting out of control. They're storming the Capitol building, and there's probably not much that these hearings will reveal, but again, I don't know. They're claiming we're going to see video and hear things that have not been revealed, so look forward to seeing what's happening. Tomorrow at this time, I'll break it down for you. I'm going to watch it tonight, and we'll see what's been presented. Truth is what we're about here on this program, right? It's not about partisanship. It's not about a political party or a political candidate. It's about truth, and that's the only thing I want to present. Donald Trump will not testify before the committee, nor will former Vice President Mike Pence. Instead, Democrats hope to turn the whole midterm conversation towards that event and really away from inflation and gas prices that are in front of everybody's noses. And you'll hear, again, tomorrow perspective on this. We'll bring you some experts on it. We'll break it all down and see really what comes out of that. But, I think the midterms are going to be a bloodbath no matter what comes out of all this. Whether Roe gets overturned, whether or not there's some new revelation that comes out of what happened on January 6th. I think And you know this. You're there. I mean, you're putting gas in your car. My car wasn't even on empty the other day. I might have had a quarter of a tank. And it was almost $85, $86 by the time I got done filling up my tank. It was crazy. It was just crazy. You know, I know inflation and the economy, number one concerns for a lot of people. And, of course, what are we seeing in our country today? We're seeing such division. We need healing and we need unity, right? We don't need more division. We had those horrible shootings in Uvalde, Texas, and then Buffalo, New York. The Gun Violence Archives, I saw a stat earlier today. It said that there were 13 mass shootings last weekend. But from Friday through Sunday night, 69 people are injured, 17 were killed. And if you're not familiar with what a mass shooting is defined as four or more people being shot and or killed, right? So you don't necessarily have to die in that, but four or more people being shot and or killed. The worst of those happened in Philadelphia and in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was actually back on the East Coast. I have family both in Philadelphia and Delaware. The headlines, you know, the news were filled with this. The archive says that there's been 246 mass shootings so far this year, or only halfway through the year, right? It's pretty daunting number. It matches where we were last year, and of course, this isn't something that we're comfortable with. You know, it's actually horrible, and we are the freest, the bravest, the greatest nation on the planet. We shouldn't see these type of numbers, right? We really need to do something that's going to change that. And the something, and I when I saw these numbers over the weekend, I said, I have to talk about this. I want your perspective on it, too. What's the something that's going to change it, right? What is it? I mean, there's a lot of debate over gun control. I had conversations with my brother-in-law and family. You know, should we limit guns? Should we do this? Should we do that? Right? All this rhetoric that we often hear, stronger gun laws, et cetera. I think the problem goes even deeper than that. I think it deals with the breakdown of the family. And we need to change that. We need to strengthen the family. We need better mental health care. And yes, we cannot allow guns to get in the hands of people who should not have them. Dr. Mick Meeker is going to be joining me at 4 Central today. We'll be talking much more about that. In fact, she just came out with a master class, if you will, on the importance of strong fathers and strong families. It will be a great conversation. I'd love to have you join us for that and hear that. But, you know, Homeland Security is warning of more violence. They put out a terror threat bulletin saying that the coming months may contain more violence. Listen to this report from CBS.
The Department of Homeland Security's latest terror threat bulletin.
Analysts and researchers from the Department of Homeland Security have been poring over online platforms, particularly those known to house these sorts of conspiracy theories from fringe extremist groups. And as we continue to see mass shootings in public gathering spaces, places like schools, places of worship, malls, supermarket, that concern about these ideological beliefs prompting copycat attacks is really what's keeping officials up at night.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but 246 mass shootings seems pretty terroristic to me. You know, DHS says that the nation remains in a heightened threat environment. They expect that the environment is going to become what they say, quote, more dynamic in the coming months. I love words. Don't you? You love the way things are phrased. There are no specifics offered, but it seems that the upcoming Dobbs decision is in the background, and that could happen any day. More than likely, it's going to happen at the end of the month. We'll see whether places of worship are going to be targets. We're going to see whether or not more pro-life centers are going to be targets. And we're going to see whether or not minority religions and ideological opponents are going to be targets. We're also going to see copycats of this shooting. That's another strange phenomenon that often takes place with them. But speaking of pro-life centers, let me just, share one more story with you here. Some of those terror attacks, they're already happening. They are already taking place, although terrorists seem to be favored by this administration and the targets of the terror disfavored. Pro-life organizations are seeing attacks all over the country. The terrorist group Jane's Revenge, remember them? They've claimed responsibility now for another vandalism. This of a pregnancy center in New York. Here's WKBW in Buffalo, New York. They had a report about this yesterday. Listen to this overview.
Amherst police consider a fire at a health clinic to be an arson. The fire started at a facility that offers pregnant women alternatives to abortions. Tonight, the company's CEO says this is just a part of a coordinated attack against pro-life supporters.
It was just after 3 a.m. Tuesday when police and fire were called here. to Compass Care Pregnancy Services in Amherst. Compass Care CEO Jim Harden held a news conference saying this was no accident. He says windows in the reception room and nurse's office were broken and fires were set inside, causing extensive damage.
The smoke damage was extensive throughout, as well as a lot of fire damage. We're pretty sure all the equipment's been destroyed. We're not sure. We haven't been able to get in and turn it on. All of our power's out.
Compass Care is a pro-life medical service which provides alternatives to abortion. Harden says the graffiti written on the backside of the office Jane was here is in reference to an extreme abortion group called Jane Revenge.
So Jane's Revenge is this group that's attempting to strike fear into the hearts of pro-life service organizations to keep them from providing care.
Harden says a similar clinic was targeted in Madison, Wisconsin last month, with Jane's Revenge claiming responsibility and threatening more sites.
We reported to the FBI 2 weeks ago, and they are in the process of investigating. They were here this morning as well.
I reached out to the local FBI office. A spokesperson tells me they are denying comment at this time.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more of it. You're going to see much more. There was a pregnancy center in Buffalo, New York, firebombed over the weekend. We've seen these centers get graffitied in the last week, or at least two, with threatening messages in Florida and North Carolina, even in Washington, D.C. And those are in addition to the ones that have taken place in Washington State. You heard about the one in Madison right there, or Oregon, Texas. Prayers are needed. Prayers are certainly needed, not just for protection of those who work there. They're doing a good work. Prayers for their clients, but especially for those who are perpetrating these horrible atrocities, these crimes. And I do hope that they will be held accountable, and I certainly hope, pray for their conversion. Hey, let's change gears for a moment. I want to talk to you a little bit about gas prices. I'd love to get your take on this as well. As I said, I was traveling today. I was in my car just to go to spend some time in prayer before the show, and my producer was telling me gasoline, where she is, $7 a gallon. I just made this cross-country trip, and I got to say it was expensive. You know, the cost of gas from state to state is varying, but more and more states are now joining that $5 club, some now in the $6 club, some at $10. I saw one story where I think there was a gas station in L.A. having around $10 a gallon. Now, look, I'm not alone. You know the feeling. You go to fill up your tank, and you're thinking, what is going on? We've got about 10 states where the average price right now is above $5 a gallon. Everywhere else is $4 plus. There is that station in Los Angeles. I don't know how they get away with it. You know, it's getting to be famous, or I should say infamous, right, for having super high prices. People paying, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. But everywhere else around L.A., it's above $6. And I don't know how some people are going to make it. I heard one person say, I got to decide, you know, do I put gas in the car to get to work? Or do I put food on the table? I've really got to readjust my grocery bills. Some people live paycheck to paycheck. If you're in a low wage job, it's really hitting those people hard, where does it end? Where are we going? You got to wonder how high are these prices going to go? And the other thing that struck me, and I saw an article earlier today, it raised the question, are these high prices deliberate? Are they deliberate? You're probably saying, what are you talking about deliberate? President Biden has had every opportunity since he's been in office to allow American oil and gas production to increase. But instead, now he's trying to get the Saudis to increase their production. You know, we've had dialogue with South America and a whole litany of other places. Bad policy, bad energy policy is really what is at the heart of this. And you'll hear, well, what about Putin and the war in Ukraine and Putin's price hike? And let's talk about it. I've been invited James Coleman. He's a non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute who focuses on energy policy to join us today to give us some insight on what's unfolding and maybe what you can expect in the days ahead. James, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Thank you. It's great to speak with you.
It's great to talk to you. Your colleague at AEI, Mark, is it Thiessen? Thiessen? He recently wrote a piece in the Washington Post. I don't know if it was yesterday or when I saw this, that these high prices are deliberate. I'd love your take on that, because that struck me. I thought, wow, Is there a movement behind why we can't get a grip on these prices? Do you think that's the case? What do you think is driving these high numbers?
Well, I do think that there are certainly elements of the Democratic coalition that want higher gasoline prices because, you know, the higher the cost for gasoline prices, the more people will think about, you know, biting the bullet, buying an electric vehicle or driving less, et cetera. And that's been a complaint of many of the Democratic interest groups for a long time. Now, I think what we're seeing with the Biden administration is a very conflicted administration, which frankly hasn't had a coherent energy policy since prices started rising when they took office. And so you've seen them at times say, oh, no, we want more drilling, at times asking regimes like Venezuela or Iran for more oil. But in terms of their actual decisions, if they were trying to enable oil and gas production here in the United States, which produces more than any other country in the world, they have basically consistently taken positions that reduced our oil and gas output. So it seems like they're working at cross purposes. I'm sure there are political folks within the Biden administration that understand that gasoline prices are a big problem for them. But there are also aspects of the administration that are pursuing that longstanding policy of higher energy prices.
So you, I know you remember this when Biden was in Japan. He said at a Tokyo news conference there, I think it was the end of May, yeah, when it comes to gas prices, you know, we're going through what he called an incredible transition that's taking place. And God willing, when it's over, he says, we're going to be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels. But my question is, do they see this as almost a necessary evil to get Americans to the point where they say, gosh, I just can't afford these fuel prices anymore. And yeah, maybe I need to go electric. This incredible transition, those were his words. That's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of Americans who are barely making ends meet. And the only thing incredible is about how high these prices are going to go right now. What are your thoughts? Is there an ideology behind this, though? Because there's a strong push to go green. I'm not opposed to that, but I just think that it's got to be a gentle transition. You just can't, you know, you just can't pull the Band-Aid off, so to speak. Can't open the wound. Your thoughts on that and what he said there in Japan and how true that is.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that's very misguided. And if he's promising Americans that, you know, if we just get rid of fossil fuels, then we won't have energy price spikes, he's very mistaken. You know, the reality is, you know, although, of course, when you're out of office, you try to promise and be all things to all people. And so he was trying to tell his sort of environmental base, hey, look, I'm going to stop fossil fuel production, completely stop oil production on federal lands where it had been, you know, booming, et cetera. That he, you know, if he does that, unfortunately, the reality is we don't have a backup energy system that works as well. We're already seeing the increase in prices that we'll get because, you know, oil, for all the negative things about the oil, the great thing about oil is that it's actually very easy to transport and store. And that means that you can kind of smooth out prices. In fact, for all of last year, we were short of oil. We were producing 2 million barrels per day less than we were consuming. We were living off of our stores. And we were able to get through that, although with with gradually increasing gasoline prices because we weren't producing enough oil. By contrast, look at what happens with electricity. Electricity, you can't store electricity to a first approximation. You certainly can't store it over long periods of time. And so if it's ever out of balance at all, the whole grid goes down, you have blackouts, et cetera. Now think about the problem for that if you're relying on electricity for your emergency transportation, for more and more things for your heat in your house. The more reliance on electricity, unfortunately, will make our energy system more brittle. And, you know, maybe that's worth it if we're depending on what focus you put on those environmental concerns, but it certainly would have to be a very gradual and careful transition. And that's not what we're seeing right now.
And James, it's funny you said that because I had this very same conversation with my wife the other day. I was thinking, as these prices are going up, you know, there's this move for electric cars. A friend of mine is getting an electric truck. You know, they're going down this path. But I'm thinking, where does all this energy come from? I saw a report, I forget where, it might have been the Daily Wire or somewhere not too long ago. They were making this case that rolling blackouts might be coming to America. There was an assessment by the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, and they were claiming that about two-thirds of the country is at some risk of rolling blackouts this summer. I know the West Coast is dealt with this quite a while. But and again, a rolling blackout is a blackout, for those who don't know, done intentionally so that the grid isn't harmed in the long run. You know, and this happens when there's not enough power being created to meet the high demand. If we all go electric, we need to get our grid fixed, don't we? I mean, our grid is already kind of vulnerable, is it not? I mean, how are we going to supply this energy when we don't have the infrastructure?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And unfortunately, our grid has become less reliable over time. And frankly, it's going to be a challenge because your grid has to, unlike oil, which you can store, it has to exactly balance how much power is being produced and how much is being demanded every second. And if that goes out of balance at all, you can have system-wide blackouts like we had in Texas. That's what happened in Texas. It was out of balance for 4 minutes, and as a result, we lost power for 4 days. So that is a huge potential problem, and we need to get it solved before we start restraining and stopping other reliable sources of energy.
Well, I know I only have you for a few more minutes. Let's grab a call or two for you. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Margaret's listening in Chicago. Margaret, hi, you're on the air with James Coleman.
Hi, I actually dropped my son off in the city of Chicago. I live in the Chicago suburbs, just dropped him off in the city. Gas prices were, for the cheap gas, $6.65. For the silver was $7.37.
Wow.
And I think that they want us to go electric so we can be holding to China. I mean, that's where the batteries will come from. Is that true?
Well, it's another good point. Finish your thought. And I want you to pick up on that point too, James, because, you know, we're talking about power grids, but what about batteries and all the elements that go into creating them? An incredible dependence with China, who right now is our largest economic rival. But, Margaret, finish your thought, and we'll let him respond as well.
No, I heard, and I don't know how true it is, that all the materials for these batteries come from China. So now we're beholden to China.
Yeah, they also come from Africa, a lot of these places that China now has rights to mine and to drill. But your thoughts, James, love to hear what you've got to say.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's the intent, but I am worried that it will be the effect. It's important to understand that, you know, of the minerals that you're really going to need a lot more of if you're going to have a lot more electric vehicles, if you're going to electrify transport, you know, some of the key ones are ones like cobalt and lithium. Unfortunately, the United States is not in the top 10 producers of those minerals. Now, some of those minerals are produced in, you know, some of our allies, countries in, you know, South America. It's not all in China, but China is an important producer of some of those minerals as well. But the important contrast is with oil and gas, where we are by far the number one producer of both oil and natural gas. And I would also say that just like we haven't proven we can build a reliable electricity system solely dependent on these newer sources of energy, we certainly haven't proved that we have the capability of mining these critical minerals to support this transition. So it's not clear that we can secure our supplies in the same way that we have secured our supplies of oil and gas. And we have a lot of work to do before it would be we could make a secure transition to these newer sources.
Yeah, just one more thought here, too. I mean, when the president took office, he signed executive orders, and we saw what happened when it came to drilling here in our own country. What do you see as the solution? There are people who are advocating the fact that, you know, if the Biden administration cared for this, you know, these rises in gas prices, they would do everything in their power to increase domestic production. Is enough being done to increase domestic production, and your thoughts on how we can get to that point where we can be self-reliant again?
No, in fact, right now they are delaying production and denying opportunities to, you know, new leases for oil and gas. They've unfortunately, you know, stopped pipeline projects. They have in many ways are holding up oil and gas production in the United States. Now, what I think they need to do is not only reverse some of those steps, but also indicate a long-term commitment to a more reasonable and centrist energy policy, because think about this from the perspective of investors. You're sinking money into an investment that may not pay off for 10 or 20 years. You have a president who came in saying that he wanted to end all fossil fuel production on federal lands, at times suggested that he wanted to end fracking, et cetera. if he just one day says, oh, actually, now I want you to produce more, it's not very convincing that he really is committed to a 10 or 20 year course mm-hmm. of more reasonable and centrist policy. And I think that's what a lot of investors are looking for yeah. to have the confidence to put money into more domestic production.
All right, one final call for you, James. We'll go to Jim in Minnesota. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, people are worried about driving their car and stuff. How about the farmers putting thousands of dollars a day in their tractor a day and yeah. then the harvested thousands of dollars a day in their combine? Where does that end? And who they have to pass that while farmers is hard for them to pass that on, like a trucking company. And then 80% or 86% of our products get moved by diesel trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
The world runs on oil, period. Now, who, you know, it's going to go up when you're putting thousands of dollars a day into
your. Yeah, it's a good point, Jim. Let me, your signal's breaking up a little bit. I want to give James the final thought here. And to his final point there, which Jim was saying too, what about the amount of fuel that goes into these tractors that provide the food that America eats? But even diesel. Diesel prices are worse than our gas prices in a lot of places. That all gets trickled down. You see it in your groceries and the transportation costs and everything else that we're now consuming. So we're just going to see things get more expensive. Your final thoughts, James, if you would.
Yeah, so unfortunately, diesel prices are also connected not just to oil prices and not enough oil and gas production in the United States, but also to a shutting down refineries that produce the diesel that we need to power our economy. And, you know, unfortunately, our environmental regulations play a role in shutting down those refineries. And I think that part of a long-term course towards lowering energy prices might have to include taking steps to ensure some of those refineries stay open or reopen.
Well, James, thank you for your time. I value it. I really appreciate your expertise. It was great talking with you today. People want to follow you. Best way to do that is at AIE, I'm assuming?
Yeah, or you can check me out on Twitter at Energy Law Prof.
Energy Law Prof. Check him out there. That's his handle. All right, I got to leave it right there. When we come back, Andy McCarthy will be stopping by. I want to bring you up to speed on a story that just is really should be headline news everywhere, and it's not. The assassination attempt on a Supreme Court justice, one of the three co-equal branches of government. Why isn't the media more vocal about this? We'll get into that and much more. Stay with me.
All the news and issues of the day. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
A California man has been charged with the attempted murder of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. He was arrested early Wednesday morning near Kavanaugh's Maryland home, the site of recent protests by abortion rights advocates. The individual, identified by police as 26-year-old Nicholas Roski, was armed with a handgun and planned to kill the conservative justice, according to authorities. He was reportedly voicing distress about the expected reversal of a landmark decision legalizing abortion nationwide.
This kind of behavior is obviously behavior that we will not tolerate.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland spoke to reporters when asked about the arrests before a closed-door meeting Wednesday.
Threats of violence and actual violence against the justices, of course, strike at the heart of our democracy. We will do everything we can to prevent them and to hold people who do them accountable.
Kavanaugh's home in the Washington suburb of Chevy Chase has been the site of some protests by abortion rights advocates since the May 2nd publication of a leaked draft opinion.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the Dobbs decision. Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. Joining me in just a moment, Andy McCarthy will be stopping by. That's an amazing story that should be wall-to-wall coverage. And I was reading a report earlier today about how ABC's Good Morning America, CBS's morning show, NBC Today, they dedicated three times the amount of coverage to the January 6th hearing that's going to take place tonight than they did towards a serious threat, an assassination attempt of a sitting Supreme Court justice, one of the, you know, equal branches of government here. You know, it's crazy. CBS spent 3 minutes and 3 seconds on the story. That's it. NBC, 2 minutes, 45 seconds. It goes on and on. Even the New York Times only included a one-line blurb on its front page instead of the, you know, instead seven, you know, color photographs of January 6th and headlines. The headline, Inside an Attack on Democracy, that was prominently displayed. So you can see where the media is on a lot of these issues. And I don't want to downplay either of these things. And as I said, we're going to break down for you, you know, what happened on January 6th a little bit later. But this is a big story. You've got a guy who's going to had the intent of assassinating a sitting Supreme Court justice. Who knows what he would have done with the family members? He saw these two U.S. Deputy marshals standing guard. He turned, he walked down the street, called the Montgomery County Police hotline to say he had suicidal thoughts, wasn't thinking clearly, and he was quickly arrested. And he admitted that he was going to kill the justice and then commit suicide. It'll be a murder-suicide. And they asked why, and he says because he was upset with the potential overturn of Roe v. Wade. And he was concerned that Kavanaugh would vote to strengthen the Second Amendment. Here's a guy who also was a very strong pro-death, pro-choice advocate. You know, he's not pro-life. But again, I just think the guy's not right. I really do. I mean, again, we'll talk about this later in my final hour today, but I think mental health in this country, I think the broken family, lack of fathers, I think a lot of that plays into this. But again, what do we see? We see division in our country. We see it with the media. We see it on Capitol Hill. We see it in the hearts of American people. And all this stems from the leak of that first draft opinion of the Dobbs decision 5 weeks ago. And I remember when Senator Schumer, Chuck Schumer, I don't know if you saw this audio or not today, when that happened, you know, he was outraged. So was a lot of the left that Roe would possibly be overturned. So when he was stirred, listen to what he said. He said this about 2 years ago. This is what Senator Schumer stirred up 2 years ago. I think this is when Kavanaugh was nominated. I forget the exact time he said this, but listen, I'll play this for you. Gives you a sense of where he stands with Brett Kavanaugh and this whole issue.
And they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
So, yeah, Maggie's telling me it's 2020 that took place. Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate that. Again, he later tried to claim he was referring to the political, you know, price Senate Republicans were going to pay for putting these Supreme Court justices on the court and warning that the justices will unleash a major grassroots movement on the issue of reproductive rights. That's what he claimed. I think it's crock personally, but that's what he said. I'm joined today by Andy McCarthy. I'll get his take on this. He's a contributing editor at National Review, senior fellow at the National Review Institute. And of course, you've probably seen him frequently on Fox News. He's a contributor there, and it's good to have him here with us. He's the author of Ball of Collusion. And Andy, it's great to have you back. Good afternoon.
Drew, great to be with you.
Thanks so much for being here. This story, when I heard about it, I was quite shocked, to be honest with you. I thought, man, there's going to be wall-to-wall coverage. You're going to get sick of hearing about it. And then I saw that report about how little coverage mainstream media, both television and print media, were giving to this. What does that say? How do you interpret that?
I don't know what you mean, Drew. The New York Times got to the story on page A20 today. So, crazy. You know, what's the problem? You know, look, I think we have to understand. I just wrote a piece for National Review that'll go up this afternoon on this. But I just think we have to face the fact that we would like on the conservative side to believe that the dividing line in our society is violence, and that if you engage in violence rather than peaceful dissent, that it doesn't matter what ism is driving you to your actions, it's wrong, and we condemn them, whether it's right wing, left wing, or any wing. But that is not the way the left sees it. Their dividing line is not violence; it's good versus evil, and it's good versus evil as they see it, which is if you are a progressive and doing things for the cause, you're good. And if you're a conservative and pro-American, you're evil. And that is the dividing line. And it's why you see again and again and again that Democratic administrations go easy on terrorists. Just last week, the Biden administration gave a sweetheart deal to two left-wing radical lawyers who firebombed a police car in New York. Democratic administrations pardon terrorists. Universities throughout the United States have taken, for example, Weather Underground terrorists who plotted mass murder attacks, some of whom were sentenced to decades in prison, but got out because presidents pardoned them. And then the universities gave them coveted professorial chairs in their on their faculties. So, you know, I'd like to be able to say that violence is our dividing line, but it's simply not. And the reason that we're seeing the kind of sparse coverage that we're seeing today is because in their Manichaean view of the world, Kavanaugh is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure they'll at least today say, you know, the guy who's been charged really shouldn't have done that. But they're not all that upset about it. And, you know, once the dust settles within a few days, we'll be ready for the, you know, why Kavanaugh had it coming columns. I wish it wasn't that way, but that's how it is.
You know, I agree. I think those are some good points. We don't know a whole lot about this Nicholas Roski yet. And I would just think the man must be mentally imbalanced in some respect to one, want to do this, but then two, walk past the you know security that was there and then call the police on himself. Is there any indication as to what his motive was other than what he said there? I mean, is this guy stable? What do we know about him?
Well, we know that according to the complaint, he told the police that he's very upset about Roe versus Wade potentially being overturned. And he's also upset about the mass murder attack in Uvalde. He had suicidal thoughts, but they were, from what I can gather from reading the complaint, assuming, again, that the allegations are true, we should stress that it's a complaint that hasn't been proved in court yet. But if the allegations in the complaint are true, his plan was to commit suicide in the course of also taking out Justice Kavanaugh. So he had suicidal thoughts, but he's also a leftist, and he wanted his demise to be meaningful. So, you know, he wanted to go out by taking Justice Kavanaugh with him. I don't know if that's, you know, I mean, it's not anything that you or I would see as stable, but it's, you know, there's a wide berth in the criminal law for prosecuting people who understand right from wrong, even if they're acting in a strange way.
Hey, and you know, shortly after the that Dobbs draft was leaked, the Senate unanimously passed a bill that would give, you know, greater protections to the justices and their families. People began protesting outside of it. And again, you do see security in front of Kavanaugh's house, but why did House Democrats hold that bill up? I mean, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. It doesn't seem partisan to me at all. Has anything changed on the status of the bill since yesterday? Where is that today?
Drew, they consider it to be partisan because the conservative justices are on the wrong side. The reason the Biden administration is not prosecuting people who are blatantly violating the law by protesting at the justices' homes is because the left hopes that the intimidation campaign will work.
Yeah.
So politically, the House, which is controlled by Democrats, does not want to go forward with a bill under these circumstances that would improve security at the homes of the Supreme Court justices because it would convey the wrong message to their base. They want to ratchet up the pressure on the Supreme Court justices, so they don't want to enact this. It's you know, I mean, it's disgusting, but it's simply they're trying to intimidate the court.
I sit back and I think if Obama had his way and they were able to get Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court, I wonder where Garland would be on this today. Do you think he'd be thinking differently if he was a Supreme today?
No, because he wouldn't be targeted. He's a progressive. You know, I think this is shameful too. I wrote about this last week. We haven't heard one word from the progressive justices standing up for their institution and for their conservative colleagues. Now, I hear from people who, you know people on the court better than I do, that, you know, people are really upset about this and they really are angry. And that includes the progressive justices. Okay, but, you know, how about coming out and saying something about it? I don't understand why they think that they would have these, the progressive justices, that is, why they would think they would have any prestige or power if their own institution is undermined. And if their institution is no longer a functioning judicial institution and everybody's view of it is it's supposed to decide cases based on political pressure, then what's the point of being a Supreme Court justice?
Yeah, so true. My guest today, Andy McCarthy, if you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. We'll take just a few calls. I only have a few more moments left with him. Follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle's at Andrew C. McCarthy. That's at Andrew C. McCarthy. You get plugged into everything that he is reporting on, and I think you'll appreciate following him there on Twitter's book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Is a great read, too. So you can check that out. We'll be right back. We'll take just a call or two, as time is always a premium here. Stay with me. The conversation continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
One place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Now.
Now, activists continue to vow that they're going to protest at Justice's house despite alleged attempts to kill a sitting Supreme Court justice. Good afternoon, or justice, I should say. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be with you. I'm joined today by Andy McCarthy. We're taking a look at all the latest that is now unfolding. And as you know, a California man was arrested outside of Justice Kavanaugh's house with what has been described by authorities as an assassination attempt. It's raising a lot of questions, too. What kind of protection do the Supreme Court justices have? Can you intimidate a judge, a justice? Can you peacefully protest outside of their homes? Are there laws against this? And Andy, let's pick it up on that point. You know, I thought there's got to be a law out there that will say, hey, you cannot do what we're trying to do is intimidate these sitting Supreme, these conservative Supreme Court justices, so that when they make their decision, they might second guess, you know, what they're going to do regarding the Dobbs decision. What's on the books right now? What can be applied? Is there anything at all? And why isn't it being employed if that's indeed the case?
Drew, I think the only reason it's not being employed is because the people who are demonstrating are political allies of Democrats, because there's a clear law on the books that says that you can't protest outside the home. The terms they use are picketing and parading, but you can't do that outside the home of participants in judicial proceedings. And that's not just judges and justices. It's, you know, witnesses, jurors. And the reason for that is, you know, we often refer to the judiciary as the non-political branch. I don't think we think about why we say that. The reason we say it is because in our constitutional system, they are insulated from politics. That's why they're not elected in the federal system. They're right. appointed by the president. But the idea is we want courts to decide important issues based on the law and nothing else, not political pressure, not fear, not intimidation, not favor. So, you know, to the extent the Biden administration comes out and says, you know, the line that they draw is are these people being violent or are they peacefully protesting? That's never been our standard with respect to judicial proceedings. There is no First Amendment free expression right to protest on the lawn of a Supreme Court justice. That's obstruction of justice. That's not a First Amendment.
And I think what we're seeing here is really the Democrats right now sending an unacceptable message that private homes are no longer off limits. I mean, Speaker Pelosi, right? I think, should bring up, at least for a vote. I mean, if that's the case and nobody agrees, then fine. Bring the bill up for a vote, the one that the Senate passed unanimously to provide more security for the Supreme Court. And for their families, if this was me, I'd be very concerned about my wife, my children. What are they waiting for? What's their rationale for not passing this? It makes no sense to me.
That they don't, they're trying to intimidate the court.
Yeah.
So if they pass that, they would be helping to secure the court. They want the court to feel vulnerable so that they won't decide Dobbs the way that the Alito draft opinion that we've seen would decide.
You don't think you don't think anything's going to change. I would assume the way, you know, nope. That initial version of the Dobbs leak is going to be pretty close to what the final draft's, but I'm sure they're going to fine tune it and tweak it. But it was pretty, pretty well written. And I can't see anybody switching. I can't see this type of behavior motivating somebody to change their position on that.
Yeah, I sure hope not, Drew. But then again, you know, I'm not, for example, Justice Kavanaugh, who had somebody armed with a gun outside his house with a crowbar and other burglary tools in the home where he lives with his two small children and his wife.
That's terrible.
You know, I don't know. It's easy for me to say what I would do. I'm not feeling the same pressure Justice Kavanaugh is. And I'm not suggesting that Justice Kavanaugh is going to do a flopperoo here. I'm just saying you know, the reason people intimidate is because it works a lot of the time.
Yeah, and you know, Andy, I said this in the very beginning, too. You know, if I'm on the razor's edge on this decision, right, and I could have gone either way, and based on the law, I was tilting this way, and all of a sudden I see this and the threat of my life or my family's life being in jeopardy, you know, unless you have really a strong set of moral values, moral fortitude there, you could maybe be pushed to the other side of that razor's edge by this type of behavior. That's what makes it, to me, so egregious. But there's one other thing I want to get to, because I have a minute or two with you. Pro-life pregnancy centers all across the country now, they're being hit by vandals from coast to coast. Is the Justice Department, are they going to do any kind of investigation into this? It does seem like a conspiracy, you know, when you're looking at something over multiple state borders. But again, there's been kind of a deaf ear to this.
Yeah, I don't think so, Drew. I mean, I think that if somebody got killed, they'd probably feel like they had to do something. But the something that they did would not be what they would do in a case if the politics were different. I mean, you know, two people who firebombed a New York City police car, two lawyers, say, who firebombed a New York City police car, if they were, you know, pro-Trump conservatives, they'd get the book thrown at them, and they'd be looking at something close to life in prison.
Right.
The Biden administration just gave a sweetheart deal last week to these two lawyers to give them basically 18 months in prison because they felt like they had to do something, but they're not really all that upset about, you know, radical left-wing violence. So, you know, they gave them a slap on the wrist. They want to be able to tell people they did do something, but they don't want to do anything to anger their base because their base believes in this stuff.
Don't you think it's going to come back to bite them, though, in the end? I mean, liberal policy, you see the bad fruit of defunding the police and of where gas prices are right now, some of these energy policies. When it comes, don't you think that when it comes both to midterms, maybe even the general, even people who are a little bit more liberal are going to say enough's enough?
Yeah, I think they will for a while. But, you know, when something's important enough to the left, like Obamacare was,
right.
They passed an Obamacare barely when they knew it was going to kill them in the next three or four election cycles.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the event, what ended up happening was
that's a good point.
They were out of power for a couple of cycles, but they're right back in business now. Yeah. You know, so they're willing to do what it takes to advance their agenda. I mean, that's history.
Well, Andy, your new article, where's it going to be? How can we check that out and read it?
At National Review. And I got this guy, Drew Mariani, who I'm talking to, so I haven't been able to check the website, but I think it'll be up pretty soon.
Yeah, we want to link over to it, so we'll make sure everybody does that. And we always are grateful for your insight. Keep up your good work, your eloquent writing, and look forward to the next time you and I can talk.
It's my pleasure, Drew. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Andy McCarthy. And check out the website. Check out National Review. You can check out his book, too. I do recommend that. Ball of Collusion is a great read. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Andrew C. McCarthy. All right, so check him out there. Only a few minutes. We're going to pray the chapel today coming up in a couple minutes here. I just want to invite you to join me today. It's good to be back with you. I've been praying for you in my absence. I've been praying for our country. I really have. I'm amazed because I'm an observer of all things that are cultural. I consume news on a daily basis as part of what I have to do to be able to present to you what's happening in your world and hopefully try to give you a moral perspective and just bring some rationality to it. Like I said, tonight we're going to have these January 6th hearings. If there's new information that comes to light, if there's something that we've never seen before, I want to be on the side of truth. I want to make sure that we present that. It's not about whether you're Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal. To me, it's about moral values. It's about what's the best for the common good, right? It's about advancing goodness and truth and beauty. It's about bringing God to the culture. That's what we're all about. That's what this is all about. And so I hope you'll stay with me. Coming up a little later, in the last hour especially, I'm going to take a look at why I think we're seeing some of this. And my guest, Dr. Meg Meeker, is going to join me. I think she's right on point, something that I think people will be talking much more about in the days ahead. I think we're on the front end of this story, so I'll bring you up to speed on that. But if you want to join me for the chaplet, here's how you do it. It's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I heard the ad, the message for the trip for the pilgrimage to Israel running at the very top of the program here today, just a few minutes ago. And I think, I can't say this for sure, but I think the window for that is just about to close. I think it's either this week or next week. I'm going to find out. So if you have contemplated maybe taking a pilgrimage, if you want more information, simply go to relevantradio.com/Holy Land check it out. All right. Read about where we're going, the places we're going to be, places we're going to pray together. A lot of people are already signed up to join the trip. I can't wait to travel and pray and play and have a chance to be with everyone. But if you can't go, do this, okay? Please leave us your prayer intentions. I know not everybody can go. Things can be tight. Send me that prayer intention, and we will bring it with us to all these holy sites.